I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Sounding the alarm.
Unfortunately, under the current FDA protocols, many women don't even realize just how dangerous and risky these drugs are.
Pro-lifers renew their calls for the Food and Drug Administration to reinstate restrictions on widely available abortion drugs. Crossing the finish line. The IOC makes a major announcement about the future of women's Olympic sports. And marching into April.
We choose life! We choose life!
A report from one of the oldest state marches for life in the U.S., delayed several weeks by bad weather.
A recent survey says 7 in 10 U.S. voters support reinstating in-person medical evaluations for abortion drugs like mifepristone. In January 2023, the Biden administration eliminated the in-person requirement. Recent studies show taking the abortion drug without medical supervision can lead to major health issues. And now, findings from CRC research reveal nearly half of Americans are less likely to support elected representatives who back mail-order abortion drugs. Pro-lifers are also speaking out, saying it is time the FDA change its guidelines over mifepristone. Dr. Christina Francis, CEO of the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, released a statement that says, in part, quote, "It's overwhelmingly clear that Americans support reinstating the in-person dispensing requirement to protect women taking mifepristone. As physicians caring for women and babies every day, we see the devastating impact that the FDA's relaxed standards are having on women's health and safety." Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, also released a statement. She says, in part, quote, "Ahead of midterms, pro-life Republicans must act and speak out boldly about stopping the mail-order abortion drug crisis. Sitting on the fence makes no voters happier. It is a surefire recipe for avoidable losses this November." Another new report says telehealth abortions are helping teens skirt parental notification laws. The findings are from the JAMA Health Forum. It says young adults ages 18 to 24 order abortion medication at much higher rates than older adults. And the spike particularly takes place in states with parental notification or consent laws. Michael New of the Charlotte Lozier Institute says the report shows how abortion pills undermine heartbeat laws and pro-life parental involvement laws that are in effect in over 30 states. Another pro-life policy expert is urging the Trump administration to reinstate abortion pill restrictions, saying there is no way to, quote, "make America healthy again without limiting or ending access to mifepristone." Writing in The Federalist, co-author Melanie Israel says in part, quote, "most women are not well informed about the medications that will prematurely end the life of their child." Under President Biden, the FDA pursued an abortion pill policy guided by progressive ideology, not women's health and safety. Current regulations don't require any conversation with the doctor. Informed consent is nothing more than checking a box. And the co-author of the piece, Melanie Israel, joins us now. Melanie is a visiting fellow in the Richard and Helen DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family at the Heritage Foundation. Melanie, you say the Make America Healthy Again movement will never be complete until restrictions on abortion drugs like mifepristone are returned. Why is that?
It's because these dangerous drugs are fundamentally unhealthy, obviously unhealthy for the unborn child who is killed, but also fundamentally unhealthy for the woman who is taking these drugs. And unfortunately, under the current FDA protocols, many women don't even realize just how dangerous and risky these drugs are. And so it's critically important that the MAHA movement understands just how horribly unsafe these drugs are for women, girls, and babies.
Are you surprised the Trump administration hasn't addressed the lack of oversight on the abortion pill?
It's been really disappointing. We know that the FDA says that there is some kind of review going on, which is, of course, good. There should be, but it doesn't take a review to know that these drugs currently being dispensed by the mail, online, people being able to purchase them without ever seeing a doctor. You don't have to have a safety review to know that that is horrible for women's health. And that's something that we can already see in the data. And so it would be a bare minimum step for the administration to at least, while that review is happening, put those in-person dispensing requirements back in place so that at least we don't have people going online and ordering these pills and never even interacting with a doctor at all.
Now, in your article, you made a very good point that many of the MAHA movement supporters come from a pro-abortion culture, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr. himself. What can the pro-life movement be doing to get through to them on the life issue?
You know, I think we can look back and see what has worked already. We've seen whether it's Secretary Kennedy or even Elon Musk, people you wouldn't necessarily expect to come alongside us. It has been, first of all, talking about late-term abortion and the reality of that. Many people don't know that babies can be born alive after an abortion and left to die. Many people don't know that in a lot of states, there's really no limits at all on abortion, and people can and do have those late-term abortions. And so I think for a lot of people, especially in MAHA, that is kind of an on-ramp. And then once you were able to talk about the dignity and the value of those babies farther along in pregnancy, well, you just logically keep walking it back. If those babies are valuable at 7, 8, 9 months, what about 6 months? What about five? And you just keep going back and talking about the humanity of that unborn child. And frankly, logic and biology do a whole lot to help us there. So I think the fact that we've already had people coming alongside us when it comes to late-term abortion is encouraging. And we can just continue speaking truth in love to people who haven't necessarily been traditionally our allies.
Yeah, I love that. And you mentioned that the entire approval process for the abortion pill regimen was poisoned by politics from the start. Can you walk our audience through why that was?
Sure. It goes back a long time, even back into the early 90s, where at the highest levels of the Clinton administration, they were trying to work with these overseas drug manufacturers to bring the abortion pill to the United States and work hand in hand with a drug manufacturer through this approval process. And it was, again, politicized from the start. And what they did is they enacted some safety restrictions on these drugs. Things like you have to be a doctor to dispense it. You have to opt in and basically get special training. You have to agree to report things like complications. You have to dispense in person. You have to do in-person follow-ups. And over the years, under Democrat administrations, those safety protocols have been weakened time and time again, under President Obama and under President Biden. And all of those decisions were not driven by safety data. It wasn't driven by science, and it wasn't driven by an interest in women's health and safety. It was driven by the interest of abortion pill providers because they want it to be as easy as possible to get these drugs into the hands of women and girls across the country, regardless of what the pro-life laws in their states might be.
And it's terrible that we've been seeing that play out. Now, Melanie, are there any other stories that you're following that we should be aware of?
Yes, I think one of the things that particularly members of Congress have done a great job highlighting is that it's not just women and girls seeking abortions with, you know, no medical oversight that these abortion pills are putting in danger. It's also abusers, unsupportive parents, unsupportive partners who are able to just go online and with a few clicks of a mouse lie and have abortion drugs sent through the mail to their home. And we're seeing reports all over the country of women who have been coerced into having an abortion that she didn't want, women who have had somebody sneak these drugs into their juice, their smoothie, their pancakes, Women who have even been physically threatened and told, you take this pill or else, feeling that their life is in danger if they don't take this drug. And as more and more of these stories come out, it's going to be harder and harder for the FDA to continue to allow this current regime in place where these drugs can just be sent to anyone, anywhere, with no oversight whatsoever. And ultimately, again, it's the women, the girls, and most of all those unborn babies who are hurt by this. And so the status quo is just completely unacceptable.
Well, Melanie Israel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
A new book examines the game-changing treatment that allows women who have started the chemical abortion process to reverse their decision. Abortion Pill Reversal is written by Dr. George Delgado, one of the pioneers of the process. The book gives an inside look at how APR started. It also includes accounts from women who attempted to reverse their chemical abortions and from pro-life medical personnel. We recently spoke with Dr. Delgado on his new book and pro-life career. And the author of Abortion Pill Reversal, Dr. George Delgado, joins us now. Dr. Delgado, thank you so much for being with us today. Can you tell us, what is abortion pill reversal and how does it work?
Well, abortion pill reversal is a way for women who change their minds after starting the chemical abortion process to stop and reverse their chemical abortions. And it's very important these days because 70% of all abortions in the United States are chemical abortions.
And how effective is abortion pill reversal, or APR? What do the studies say?
Our studies show that the success rate of reversal is 56 to 68%.
That's incredible. And APR has been under attack, including lawsuits that are trying to stop pregnancy centers from recommending it. Why is it such a threat to the abortion industry?
Well, I think the answer comes from one of the main opponents of APR, Dr. Daniel Grossman at the University of California, San Francisco. He's a big abortion researcher, and he's been attacking us almost since the moment he heard about APR. He was interviewed a few years ago by Slate, a liberal online platform. And in that interview, I'm going to paraphrase, but it said something to the extent that Grossman says that giving progesterone to these women under medical supervision would be safe. In other words, he's saying what we're doing is safe. But then he went on to say, however, he does not think that this should be publicized because it might mislead women into thinking that the prevalence of abortion regret is high. In other words, these people don't want anybody to know about APR because they know that if some women change their minds after starting the chemical abortion process, that blows a huge hole in their narrative that abortion is a great good for all women. Because if it were a great good for all women, why would some women change their minds?
Now, is there any way to tell how many babies have been saved by APR and what the success rate is?
Yes. So Heartbeat International has been running the Abortion Pill Reversal Network that I founded. They've been running it since 2018. And they estimate that over 7,000 babies have been saved by abortion pill reversal. And we've helped women in all 50 states and more than 93 countries. And the success rate, again, is 56 to 68%, which is much better than our calculated survival of 25% if a woman took mifepristone and did nothing else.
Now, on to your book. Can you tell us a little bit more about it and why so many of the chapters are from writers other than yourself?
Yes, so the book is in three parts. The first part is where I go into my story, how I got involved in abortion pill reversal. And I describe in very simple terms that the general public will understand how the chemical abortion process itself works, how reversal works, and then go into how the abortion pill was approved in the United States, breaking many laws and FDA regulations. And then what's going on in the United States and throughout the world. Then part two, I have other people write chapters, and seven of these are women who went through the chemical abortion process and then reversed their chemical abortions. So these are very heart-wrenching, heart-touching stories. There's also a story there written by one of the men, one of the fathers of the preborn babies, and one by a grandfather. And then three hotline nurses write their stories. And finally, two doctors, one Dr. Matthew Harrison, who performed the very first chemical abortion reversal, and Dr. Dermot Kearney in the UK, who has been persecuted extensively for offering APR. Then part three of the book, I have a chapter on the different names that were chosen for these APR babies and the very deep meanings that these names have, many of them very deep theological meanings, many meanings I think that the parents never anticipated when you think about their situations. And then some common themes. Three common things I've seen is that women often have at least one person supporting them in reversal. Two is that, there's almost always immediate regret. And number three is that most of these women have at least some relationship with God, some faith foundation. And then I wind up the book with a very poignant chapter called David and Goliath, which where I describe all the persecution we've gone through, all the hurdles we've had to face, as well as comparing APR to CPR. They're very similar, except, of course, APR saves the life of the preborn baby and the spiritual life of the mother, while CPR only saves one life. But my question I ask in that chapter is, would you ban CPR? No, you wouldn't. And so why would you ban APR? And then I have some final words, including a shout out to men out there to assume their rightful roles as leaders and protectors of the new families they've created with these women.
Well, that sounds like a very comprehensive and well laid out book. And I love how you're using both like facts and the history of what's going on, but also the stories. It truly humanized the entire situation. Now, your book concludes with words of hope, showing that APR is a metaphor for forgiveness, renewal, rebirth, and second chances. Can you tell us more about this?
Sure. Yeah. This is something that I realized very early on that it is truly transformative, because the woman who would abort her baby now becomes the savior of her baby by undertaking APR. And so the physical life of the preborn baby is saved, but the mother's spiritual life is also saved. And we've seen so many of these women who not only were able to save their babies, but they've really put their lives on track, and they have left much more meaningful, wholesome, and holy lives after APR. It's really put them on a new trajectory. So we just see that as being such a strong a metaphor for second chances in life, and how God always gives us a second chance to come back to Him and to live our lives according to His plan.
Amen. That's beautiful. And if our viewers would like more information on your book, where can they go?
So they can get the book on Ignatius.com. or Amazon, and they can also read more about abortion pill reversal at stenoinstitute.org, which is our nonprofit website, and they can also go to abortionpillreversal.com to read specifically about abortion pill reversal.
Well, Dr. George Delgado, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
The International Olympic Committee unveils a new policy to protect women in sports. Only biological women will compete in the women's category, not biological men who self-identify as women. Kirsty Coventry, an IOC member and seven-time Olympic swimming medalist for Zimbabwe, says the policy is based on science and takes into account the interests of the athletes. She adds it would not be fair for biological males to compete in the women's category. The Trump administration also applauds the move. It says the IOC's move is common sense and long overdue. The IOC says Olympic athletes will be tested to detect the presence or absence of the SRY gene, which determines male sex development. The new policy takes effect starting with the 2028 Summer Games in Los Angeles. The faithful are reacting with sorrow and horror after a 25-year-old woman took her life by euthanasia in Spain late last month. She committed assisted suicide amid objections from her own family and legal attempts by family and Christian organizations to obtain treatment for her rather than death. The country's bishops call her death, quote, a societal defeat. They add her death was not because of a terminal illness, but rather from deep wounds that cried out for attention, treatment, and hope, and that true relief from pain never comes from suicide. A member of the Vatican's Pontifical Academy for Life also weighed in. She says Noelia's story, quote, lays bare the deepest fissures within our system. It reveals a victim of institutional abandonment who was left utterly alone to face her suffering. The journalist who covered the story for EWTN also weighed in.
Lo cierto es que la vida de Noelia es un desastre.
The truth is that Noelia's life has been a mess from the very beginning. Poor thing. Her parents separated, social services took her into custody, and during that period under state guardianship, she was the victim of multiple sexual assaults. This obviously caused her a series of disorders. In fact, she had a 67% disability rating due to psychological and psychiatric issues. And during that ordeal, she was in and out of psychiatric institutions and had several suicide attempts.
That was Nicolás de Cárdenas, an EWTN News correspondent for ASI Prensa. He has been following this case since the beginning. In October 2022, Noelia's story took a major turn. Reports indicate she attempted suicide by jumping off a balcony. She survived, but was left with significant injuries to her legs and spine.
She gave an interview on a TV show here in Spain, in which she admitted that her life is a mess, and that she feels terrible, and that she says she feels lonely, misunderstood, and has no will to live. But at the same time, she says she can take care of herself, that she manages on her own, that she puts on makeup, but that she has decided to go down that path. And well, here Catholics in general have organized vigils outside the hospital.
Vigilias a las puertas del hospital.
In April 2024, Noelia requested euthanasia and was approved by the Catalan regional government. The process was suspended after legal objections from her father and the Christian Lawyers Organization. After an 18-month legal battle, the European Court of Human Rights rejected the interim measures to halt her death by assisted suicide.
The solution was to grant her request for euthanasia, which is curious because Spain's euthanasia law, which is terrible, covers cases of terminal illness. In this case, we're not talking about a terminal illness.
That was Father Miguel Garrigos, director of the Episcopal Commission for the Family and Life in the Archdiocese of Toledo in Spain. Father Garrigo says some media outlets have presented Noelia's case as a victory for freedom and self-determination. He calls it a failure.
It is so very sad that the only thing we could offer a person in such pain was to grant their request for suicide. We have to improve our support systems, providing all kinds of assistance, from financial aid if necessary, to health care and mental health support.
Coming up, March and April, pro-lifers stormed the state of Maryland for a mass and rally for the unborn, delayed several weeks by bad weather. Welcome back to EWTN's Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan. One of the oldest state rallies for the unborn was recently delayed several weeks by bad weather. But Maryland's March for Life, founded in the late 1970s, was not canceled. This week, hundreds of pro-lifers attended the rescheduled rally in Annapolis. The day included a youth event, mass, and a gathering in front of the state house. Here are some of the sights and sounds from that day.
God's plan makes so much sense to me. The God's intent, right, was this beautiful, beautiful act of the sexual union, right, of coming together as husband and wife and having those children, the gift of the child.
Thank you so much, Father Michael. That was an amazing talk. And now I was just going to share for a few moments to talk about my experience being a pro-life leader in a state like pro-choice Maryland.
But it's so important for the youth to be involved because I don't think a lot of kids realize that the impact they have and the power that their presence have when they speak out for life in the womb.
The Bible talks a lot about being a voice for the voiceless. Romans talks a lot about this. So I think it's important to be able to speak up for a group of people who are not represented.
Oh, this is going to be a long fight. I vote Philadelphia. The Quakers of Philadelphia, 100 years before the Civil War, were saying, slavery's wrong. People say, what do you mean it's wrong? It's in the Bible. They never saw slavery outlaw. They kept fighting for it. We don't know how long we'll have to keep fighting this fight, but it's all we do. Keep fighting. Because Jesus is risen. He is risen indeed.
We are the pro-life generation, and we will abolish abortion!
Protection at conception!
Protection at conception!
Protection at conception!
When I came to this country and I see people very smart, very developed, very interesting, very polite, but at the same time that allow themselves to kill a human being when they're supposed to protect, especially mothers who need to sign a paper to damage a child that is also a victim. You know? So in that moment, I decided to do something about it. And even coming here, it doesn't mean they have extra time. Not necessarily. I'm investing my time because I believe that this is important.
Finally, tonight, a Catholic priest who founded a group helping couples grow together in holiness is on the path to sainthood. Father Henley Caffarel founded Teams of Our Lady, a lay apostolate guiding married couples on the path to holiness. The French priest always said couples are made for happiness, and marriage is a path toward it. He also strongly believed the best relationships came when couples shared their problems with one another. The group began in 1939. Today, Teams of Our Lady are present in 92 countries with more than 15,000 participants. And just as in Father Caffarel's lifetime, the focus remains on marital communication and prayer. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.